When the whistle start to chirp, there's a body on the floor. Yellow flag in the air, they screaming, I can't take no more. MIA, said the DMV, yeah, we hold it down. Big Chief on my jersey, yeah, you know how we get down. It's the fade route, we don't play now,
we don't play now.
All these other shows get no plays now,
they get no plays now.
They don't got Big J on the stage now. Think they high, but they don't even got the chance
they got
now.
The chance now.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Fade Route. And first of all, I'd like to thank my boy Big J for hooking me up with that song in the intro. You can follow him on Twitter at Fat FLVKO underscore JV. That's Fat FLVKO underscore JV on Twitter. Hook him up. My man's is a wizard with all the music. Like, he's a wizard with all this music stuff. And that's number one. And number two, I apologize because I've been like all over the place with the first three podcasts. And I got school starting up. So once I get school started up and I get like back up and running with my job, then I'll have a more concrete time. I'll be more consistent with my episodes. I'll have a certain day of the week. But I got stuff to like figure out right now. So once that's in place, I assure you, I promise you, I'm coming with that consistency. So just bear with me for the time being. All right. So the first thing that we're going to talk about today, we got to talk about this obvious, like, this no call that happened over the weekend in the NFC Championship between the Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints. First of all, it was a very bad, like, a very egregious missed call, because first of all, you had pass interference because the dude from LA contacted the receiver before the ball was even, like, before the ball could be reached. It was a catchable ball and there was interference, so that was clearly pass interference. Or since the contact was head to head, like helmet to helmet, they could have called, like, unnecessary roughness, helmet to helmet, pass interference. They could have called any of that, but nothing was called. And that's really the weirdest thing about all of that. There's a lot of things they could have called, but they didn't. And what's even weirder is that there was a ref, like, if you go back and look at the replay of that, there was a ref that was about to throw his flag, and then there was another one rushing into the last second saying, no, don't do it, the ball was tipped. But the ball really wasn't tipped, if you want my opinion, it wasn't tipped. But hey, what do I know? Because, like, at the end of the day, I guess that's why I'm not a ref, right? Yeah, but and it gets even worse than that, because the NFL it's been 5 days since that no call in question, and the NFL has not yet put out a statement. Like, they have not yet put out a statement about it. The closest thing they did was fine the Rams dude that caused the contact. They fined him, and that's the closest thing they did to acknowledging that. And really, if you want my opinion on it, that's really just the NFL saying, All right, Saints fans, look, we find the dude, so it's handled, it's over, so let's just move on. And really, that's not it. That's really, I would say doing the bare minimum, but that's even less than that. Because, look, I don't know about y'all, but this is how I was raised. Like, my mom and my dad always taught me growing up, when you make a mess, you clean it up. And the ref certainly did make a mess in not calling and having their choice of three different penalties they could have called and not calling any of them. And I guarantee, I mean, I realize that this could have had a significant impact on the game. And I realize it was a very egregious error for the refs. And on the whole, this has been a very poor season when it comes to officiating. But I'm not really going to go as far as saying that the Saints would have won that game just guaranteed if that call had been made, for several reasons. Like, at the end of the day, yes, it was a bad call and all that, but Saints fans, you got to realize that Number one, you had the Saints had a 13-0 lead in this game and let the Rams come back. That's number one. Number two, again, the call was very bad. It was one of the worst calls in the league this season, if not the absolute worst. But you got to remember, just a couple plays after that, you kicked, like the Saints kicked the go-ahead field goal. So they had a 3-point lead with under 2 minutes left. So from here, if the defense makes one more stop, the Saints are in the Super Bowl regardless of the no call. But the problem, only problem with that is they didn't. So they allowed the Rams to march down the field, get within field goal range, and then Greg the Leg Zuerlein kicks a field goal to tie the game and send it into overtime. Now, in overtime, the Saints won the coin toss. So they got the ball first to start to start overtime. But then Drew Brees threw an interception, which really wasn't his fault because his arm was hit as the ball was coming out, as he was throwing. So really, I'm not going to blame the interception on Drew Brees. That's really more of an offensive line. That's really more of the offense on the offensive line because they didn't give Drew the protection that he needed to throw the ball that like it was supposed to be thrown. So really, that's on Brees. I mean, not on Brees. That's on the offensive line. So from here, the game is still tied. The Rams are not in field goal range yet. So what the Saints needed to do from here, Saints defense was again in a position where they needed to make a stop. But this time, it wasn't like they make a stop and win the game. This time, they needed to make a stop to get the ball back to their offense and keep the game going. And guess what? They didn't. Because Greg Zuerlein kicked another field goal, and this time they won the game. So really what I'm saying here is, yes, the refs missed a number of calls on that one play. Yes, the refs need to be held accountable. No, the NFL did not do nearly enough to address the issue. All of that is true, but you got to understand, that one call was not the only reason why the Saints lost this game. Another reason why the Saints lost this game is because they couldn't get anything going on the ground. They only had 44 rush yards. That's not the ref's fault. Like, they threw two interceptions. Drew Brees threw, I believe, two interceptions. That's not the ref's fault. But yet, Saints fans are asking for a rematch. I don't get it. I really don't understand it. Because, honestly, I'm speaking as a Redskins fan. Saints fans, if you listen to anything I say, listen to this. On behalf of Redskins fans everywhere, we get jobbed by the refs like this every single week. Like, we get jobbed every single week by the refs. Like, they missed a pass interference call at the end of the Texans game that would have put us in field goal position, and then Dustin Hopkins could have kicked the field goal and won the game. They missed, in the Thanksgiving game against Dallas, they missed a blatant face mask against Colt McCoy. Like, our quarterback Colt McCoy had a Dallas hand all over his face mask, and the refs didn't call that. Later in that game, Jordan Reed got hit in the helmet. Helmet-to-helmet contact, no flag. And then the Monday night game in Philadelphia, the Eagles' first touchdown, the left guard got away with a blatant false start. The refs didn't call it. The Tennessee game, matter of fact, let's go to the Tennessee game. First of all, Marcus Mariota, towards the end of the first quarter, actually, no, this was on the first drive of the game. Marcus Mariota scrambled out the pocket on third down and got a first down, but the whole thing is, number 77 on Tennessee was blatantly holding Ryan Kerrigan. Had him in a choke slam. The refs didn't call it. And then later in that drive, on the play where they scored a touchdown, Tennessee gets away with a false start. And guess what? The refs don't call it. I can go on and on and on about how many times the refs just screwed over the Redskins. And despite all of that, you don't hear me whining to the NFL asking for a rematch. Because at the end of the day, I do realize that, yes, the refs do make mistakes. Like, the refs did make mistakes, but to blame the refs, to hold the refs accountable as if they're the sole reason why the Saints lost that game, it's just idiotic. It's just idiotic, and it's irresponsible. Because some of the Saints players will probably tell you themselves, like, there's blocks the O-line could have made. There's catches the receiver. Like, there were missed tackles by the defense. Like, the thing is, the Saints got a 13-0 lead, and at that point, they thought that this game was over and they were going to the Super Bowl. And it comes down to they let their foot off the gas. They let their foot off the enemy, off the Rams' neck, and it cost them. And now LA is going to the Super Bowl for the fourth time in franchise history, and they're going up against the Patriots, who are appearing in Super Bowl number 11. Now, what's interesting about this is that the Patriots and Tom Brady have played the Rams in the Super Bowl before. So this is the third time the Patriots will be in a Super Bowl rematch. And for those of you Patriots haters out there, y'all gonna love what I'm about to say next. This is the third Super Bowl rematch for the Patriots, for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the Patriots. They lost the previous two. Like, let's go in chronological order of the first time. From the first time in 2004, the Patriots played the Eagles in the Super Bowl, and the Patriots won. And then we jump ahead 13 years later, and Philly wins the rematch. The Eagles won the rematch. Then, 2007, the Patriots play the Giants for the first time in the Super Bowl, and New York wins this one. Now we jump ahead. We don't jump ahead as far as we did for Philly. We go only 4 years ahead this time, and guess what? New York wins the rematch too. So that's a little bit of hope for the for Rams fans and Patriots haters, although most of y'all are just Patriots haters. And really, I think the Rams actually do have a good enough offense to exploit the Patriots' weaknesses on defense, particularly in their secondary. Although, yeah, it's really going to be in their secondary. Although, what's really going to define this game is, cliche as it may be, this game is going to be won in the trenches, because the Patriots' defensive line has actually been playing a lot better than I thought they would this postseason, and the Rams' rushing attack is notably, like, we all know they're one of the best run games in the league, but what we don't know is the Patriots are up there too with James White and Sony Michel, so New England can run the ball too. But if this comes down to defenses, which I really think it will, LA has the edge, because this isn't the typical Patriots defense. The typical Patriots defense is the type that holds the other team at bay, while Tom Brady gets all the credit for the win. This ain't the case. This Patriots defense can and will give up yards in chunks, because the Patriots in their AFC championship against the Chiefs, yes, they won the game in overtime, but really they could have won the game in regulation, but Kansas City was able to just march down the field in the second. I mean, because they held the Chiefs without a point. They held them to 32 yards in the first half, but the Chiefs were just able to just run all over the field in the second half. They were just running all over the place in the second half. And granted, a lot of that is because of Patrick Mahomes. He's a bright young quarterback. He's going to grow up to be an NFL elite one day. He's going to grow up to be one of the elites in the league one day. But this Patriots defense just really, they're not the Patriots defense that we're used to seeing, because this Patriots defense, particularly the secondary, isn't exactly as strong. But they're young. They got guys like J.C. Jackson, who is a DMV product, so I don't mean to brag about that, but he's from the DMV. He's from around here. And he had two penalties called on the final drive of regulation, which nearly cost New England the game. But, yeah, if you want my prediction for the Super Bowl, I think the Rams are going to take it. I really do. Now we move on to Redskins news, and that is the Washington Redskins have gotten a new defensive backs coach. We all thought it was D'Angelo. Redskins fans around here thought it was going to be D'Angelo Hall, but it turned out not to be the case. This new guy from Arizona, I think that was the right decision because he's got a lot of experience. So you combine his experience with a young and still developing defensive backfield that the Redskins have, because we got young guys in Quentin Dunbar, Fabian Moreau, and Harvey Clemens. Harvey Clemens. So, and we still got some veteran leadership in Josh Norman, although he might be released this offseason, which would save the Redskins about $8.5 million against the cap. So really what the Redskins needed here was somebody that – this is what the Redskins need in general, somebody that will hold people accountable. And hopefully this new guy – I'm very bad with names, but hopefully this new guy that just got hired will be the one that – the type that holds people accountable, like that holds the defensive backfield accountable – and helps them to develop, helps them to prosper, helps them to helps shore up that pass defense, which was very sketchy last season. So D'Angelo Hall would have been a nice hire. D'Angelo Hall would have been a nice hire, though. I certainly could have seen it because this is a guy that knows the player. Like he knows some of the players in that locker room. He knows the organization. He knows his way around. He's familiar with everything. He's already familiar with everything. So he would have been a nice hire. So maybe if this dude don't work out, D-Hall is the next in line. Because apparently the Redskins did have a meeting with him on Tuesday, and they were very intrigued with him too. So there's potential for D'Angelo Hall, if not in Washington, there's potential for him to be a coach somewhere, be on the coaching staff of some other team. Hopefully he doesn't go to Dallas. So basically, now we lean into the NFL draft and who I think the Redskins should take. Before we get into that, Indianapolis Colts backup quarterback Jacoby Brissett says that he would like to go somewhere that he could be a starter, that he could start in this league. And I know a lot of people off the bat would go, Jacoby Brissett, who's that? Who is Jacoby Brissett? Jacoby Brissett actually did start a number of games for the Colts while Andrew Luck was out. He's actually not a bad quarterback. I feel like he'd be a perfect fit for the Redskins. Look at him. We should at least look in his direction for 2019, because basically for the 2019 quarterback market coming out of college isn't particularly a strong one. But what I want for the next Redskins quarterback is a young guy who could possibly be with the franchise for a while. So I say, for the Redskins, you bring Jacoby Brissett in, let him start the 2019 season, and if he works out, then if he has a good season and or we make the playoffs, then keep him on board. Yeah, keep him on board and make him our long-term quarterback of the future. But if he doesn't work out, then really you got nothing. Then really, the quarterback market for 2020 coming out of college is a lot stronger than the one for this year. So really, it's not really a lot to lose out of this deal if you're the Redskins. There's not really a way you can lose from this. And that leads me to who I think the Redskins should draft. Now, there's a lot of different ways that this could play out. Because first of all, if the Redskins do sign Jacoby Brissett or trade for a quarterback, like, say, Nick Foles, then really there's no need to draft a quarterback in the first round, in which case I'd go defensive backfield because, again, the passing defense was sketchy at best in the 2019 season because, you know, we had names like Nick Foles, Dak Prescott, Eli Manning. Eli Manning in 2018 lit us up through the air. And let's not even talk about Drew Brees and Matt Ryan. Let's not even talk about them. So, basically, I think the Redskins, I mean, if the Redskins draft a defensive back, in the case of signing Jacoby Brissett, you could get, or, I mean, even if we don't sign Jacoby Brissett, a defensive back, the right defensive back could get our defensive backfield looking like it did back in 2005, 2007, like when we had guys like Sean Taylor and young D'Angelo Hall in his prime D Hall out like in the backfield. Like, we could have a backfield like that. Make the other team scared to throw the ball. And when you take away the air game in today's NFL, you basically shut down the offense because nowadays, while run game is important, you can't rely on running backs to get like 300 yards every single game. It's just not going to shake out for you that way. So that's option one if the Redskins do get a quarterback this offseason in free agency. Now, if not, I do think we could take a look at wide receiver because we do still need a star wide receiver, and while that could be Jamison Crowder, from what I heard, I haven't heard anything about contract negotiations with Crowder, so I'm just assuming at this point that the Redskins are letting him test the free agent market, which is cool, but if you're the Redskins, you do have to be prepared to match. If you do want Crowder back, which I do, you have to be prepared to match any offer that anybody signs Crowder to, that anybody throws Crowder's way, which could work or it could backfire, like with, say, how I'm a Wizards fan and a couple summers ago the Nets signed Otto to a contract, to a contract, and the Wizards matched and threw a max at him. And fast forward to now, Otto's coming off the bench, although that's due to an injury that he's rehabbing. He's coming off the bench. I mean, he has been productive off the bench, but bench is still the bench. But back to Redskins. Again, you got to be prepared to match any offer that other teams will throw at him, and there will be some teams that are looking to get a star wide receiver, like, say, the Packers or the Ravens. If you're a team like the Ravens and you're only one piece away from being a Super Bowl contender, and a wide receiver like Crowder could very well be that one piece, yeah, Redskins, you might need to come out your pockets to re-sign Crowder. Hopefully not, though. Now, although the term franchise tag really just haunts me to this day, just sends me shaking in my, six-foot-tall stature, if there's one player that I think the Redskins should franchise tag, honestly, it's Crowder. Because Jamison Crowder really does sound like he likes the team, like he loves the team, he loves the players, he loves the fans, he loves the city. Like he wants to be a Redskin. Those words can only mean so much when somebody like, say, the Giants. Wait, no, the Giants will not ruin that. Like somebody say the Jets is throwing, like, say, $40 million in your face. At that point, loyalty only goes so far. So for the Redskins, if you consider the franchise tag on Crowder, what I do is kind of like what I thought the Redskins were going to do with Kirk Cousins in 2016, how the first franchise tag was just like one more year, just like to see how he does just one more year, because this was like on the heels of him leading the team back from 3-5 to the playoffs, like to a division championship and the playoffs. So this was on the heels of that. So 2016 was supposed to be just the prove it year, in which Kirk himself proved that he at least has some skills. So 2017, what I thought the Redskins were going to do was franchise tag him and then work out a deal with him and then close other teams off from him to work out a deal, which did not turn out to be the case. And fast forward to now, the Minnesota Vikings threw $84 million at him. He took that, asked no questions, and led them to not, and successfully led them not to the playoffs, to put it kindly. Now, but with the Redskins, but with Crowder, though, Crowder wouldn't be asking for that for $84 million. So if I'm the Redskins, what I'd offer him is 5 years, $35 million. That's just me. That's just what I would offer. 5 years, $35 million for Crowder. Now, best case scenario for the Redskins offseason when it comes to free agency, if we get Crowder back and we get Preston Smith back, although I really don't see that happening, I feel like we're going to get either Crowder or Preston Smith back. I don't see us getting both. And then when it comes to the draft, I'm thinking best man available at 15. I honestly don't like trading up, because the last time we did that, we made the playoffs that following year, so it benefited us short term but hurt like hell long term, because basically we missed out on the 2013 and 2014 drafts, so that kind of set us back a couple years. Trading back would be the opposite, and really we haven't done that before, so I'm not against that, because at the end of the day, the Ravens traded back twice last year, and they made the playoffs. They won their division, so if it can work for them, why can't it work for us? You know what I'm saying? Or, like, whoever's available at 15, like, there's a lot of places that the Redskins could go with that 15th pick. So, really, there isn't really anybody, like, any place where we could draft somebody and I'd be mad at it. Except for maybe defensive line, because I think we've already built up enough on the defensive line, and it's starting to show in 2019. It started to show this past season how in 2018, nobody's going to give the Redskins credit for this, because nobody likes to give the Redskins credit for anything, but when it comes to run defense, the Redskins were among the most improved, if not the single most improved team when it comes to stopping the run in 2018, because I'm going to keep saying this, like, they did not allow a single 100-yard rusher until Thanksgiving. That's week 13, Thanksgiving. That means for the first 12 weeks of the season, the Redskins faced the likes of David Johnson, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, Luke Kuechly, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, and did not allow any of them to get to 100. So, yeah, like, Ezekiel Elliott finally broke that mold on Thanksgiving, and really that, I wouldn't say that was the beginning of the end, but when it comes down to it, the Alex Smith injury was the beginning of the end, although that game really was winnable after that. And really we should have won, like, we would have won if the refs decided to throw a pass interference call. See, Saints fans, look, I can do that too. I can throw the ref flag too. But I digress. We wouldn't have made it to the NFC Championship anyway, so I'm going to just let that one go. So, yeah, that just about wraps up this week's episode of the Fade Route. And I promise next week once I get my class schedule sorted out. I already have it sorted out now, but I need to see how much classes and other extracurricular activities. Once I get all that sorted out, jumbled out, I promise I will be more consistent with my episodes. I'll have like a certain day of the week, but I just need to see which day would be best for me. So once I get that all sorted out, I promise I will let you know. But until then, my name is Evan Johnson. I'm a Redskins fan. I'm not really happy right now. And just remember, I'll leave you with this. The refs made a bad call, but it wasn't the whole reason the Saints lost that game. A rematch would be pointless. Everyone knows it, so just let it go. All right, I'm out.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.